Frank hustled to the rear of the huge livery and chanced to look outside. He could just make out what he thought might be a man's leg, showing through the slats of the bottom of a chicken coop. Frank took aim and squeezed off a shot.
Oh, hell! My knee is busted!
Bob's shotgun boomed above Frank. Part of the old coop blew apart, and so did the gunman with the busted leg.
I thought I might as well put him out of his misery.
Is that you, Morgan? Yeah, it's Red Hansen. I'm gonna kill you, Morgan.
If I don't kill you first.
Who the hell are you?
Paul Harden, you bastard.
I thought I killed you and your buddy Moses Gunther back at the fort.
Nah, you must have been dreaming. But I'm damn sure gonna put lead in you, Morgan. What do you think about that, Drifter?
Frank figured they were trying to keep him talking to pinpoint his location. He offered no reply. Instead, he slipped to his left, near to the far wall, and peeked out through a wide crack. He could just see a portion of a man's leg, a boot, and part of the leg just below the knee. Frank took aim. The man's leg flew out from under him, and he hit the ground hard and rolled just enough to present a clear target. Frank squeezed off another shot before the man could get behind cover.
You bastard! You killed Harry! Me and him was pards! Damn you, Morgan!
Frank did not reply. He hit the floor as the lead started flying through the old boards of the livery. Frank crawled away. He slung his rifle up into the loft, then jumped up and grabbed hold of a rafter, swinging himself up after it. He picked up his rifle and moved to a window in the rear of the loft. The outlaws were busy laying down a withering field of fire, all directed at the ground floor, where they believed Frank to be. Frank sighted a man about 50 yards from the livery, crouched beside an outhouse behind a store. He squeezed the trigger, and the man tried to stand up. His legs wouldn't support his weight, and he toppled over. The outlaws behind the barn didn't notice Frank's shot. It was lost in the roaring of their gunfire. The townspeople were fighting back. Up and down Main Street, and in the rows of houses that made up the residential area behind the business area, the sounds of gunfire could be heard. The surprise attack by the outlaws failed. Now it all came down to which side could outlast the other in this confrontation.
Let's get out of here. This ain't working, boys.
Hold your ground. We can do this. Woolsey, you and Brownie, get inside the general store. Fill up that farmer's wagon in the rear. Get everything we need.
Come and grab me some women first. I got me an itch I can't scratch.
Yeah, I think they're in the church. Let's go there.
No! Seize the town first. Use your heads, men. Women can wait. They'll be here. Kill the men first. Don't forget about the bank full of money.
The man isn't entirely stupid.
Frank moved to the front of the livery, hoping to get a shot. An outlaw tried to run across the wide main street. He died in the middle of the street.
Two of you keep Morgan and that old fart pinned down in the barn. The rest of you concentrate on the stores. Take them one by one by sheer force. Move, damn it! Let's go, boys! Some of you get among the wagons of the Easterners. I want those people alive for ransom. This time, we won't screw it up. Move, boys!
But the outlaws did not reckon on the renewed courage of the city men. When the outlaws moved to take the wagons, they were met with a hail of buckshot from shotguns in the hands of angry city men, quickly adapting to the ways of Western justice.
To hell with Morgan!
To hell with this town! This ain't working! Let's get gone from here before we all get killed!
Fall back and regroup! Fall back east to the edge of town. Let's talk this over.
The two men behind the livery slipped away unhurt.
We won the first battle, but it ain't over. They'll be back. You can bet on that.
That they will. We'd better be ready for anything.
An unnatural stillness once again enveloped the town. What remained of the fire-ravaged Odell house blew up. Bits and pieces of the structure sent flying through the air by the heavy charge. A large timber landed directly on the body of Jack Harden, crushing the dead man.
Dynamite. Now they're getting serious about this fight.
Hold your position.
Frank carefully checked out the terrain behind the livery barn. He saw no one.
I gotta put a stop to this right now.
Frank climbed down the ladder from the loft.
You got a plan?
No, but I gotta do something.
That might mean getting yourself killed, Frank. Let's talk about this thing.
You see any of Sonny's gang from your position?
No one close. They've pulled back toward the edge of town.
There's a couple of them hiding behind that empty building about 50 yards to your left.
Frank walked to his quarters and knelt down beside Wolf, petting the animal for a few seconds.
You stay here. Be safe, old boy. You hear?
Wolf wagged his tail and licked Frank's hand. Frank moved to the rear of the livery.
I'm going. You hold down the place and watch your butt.
Will do, Frank. You take her easy.
Frank ran from the livery to Bob's small house. His move drew no fire. He took a deep breath and ran to the side of the outhouse, again drawing no fire from the outlaws. He figured the thugs behind the abandoned building couldn't see him. If he could make the ditch behind town, he'd stand a better chance of looping around the outlaws unseen. Frank ran along in the ditch, running the entire length of the business district. There were a couple of inches of water in the ditch, and it was cold. Crouching low, he carefully worked his way toward the far end of town, occasionally chancing a quick look over the edge of the ditch.
You townspeople, listen to me! We'll blow up your damn town if you don't give us the Easterners and Frank Morgan! You hear me?
This damn safe is a monster. We'll never get this thing open.
Blow it open!
Frank could not make out the words of the reply, for at that instant, someone opened fire from a building on Main Street. Frank didn't doubt the outlaw's words about the safe being a monster. He saw it once when visiting with Doc Raven in the bank-cum-stage office. He doubted the outlaws brought enough dynamite to blow it open. What they would probably wind up doing was destroying the building, while the safe remained intact. Frank scrambled out of the ditch, slipped to the side of a building, and glanced up the narrow space between buildings. It was clear, except for the broken bottles and other trash littering the ground. He stepped into the space and carefully made his way toward the street. When Frank was halfway to the street, a man ran into the space, a rifle in his hands. The unshaven man, dressed in dirty, trail-worn clothing, stared at Frank for a heartbeat, and then he lifted his rifle.
Morgan! Ah!
Frank shot him. The man stumbled backward, a startled look on his features. He lifted the muzzle of his rifle. This time, the man went down. Frank turned and ran back toward the rear of the building.
Howie! Was that you?
Howie did not reply.
Howie's down! I think Morgan's on the prowl! Gotta be him!
$5,000 and first go at the prettiest woman in town to the man who kills Morgan!
Frank opened the back door of a building and knew immediately by the smell he was into the back room of the saddle shop. He could also smell the strong odor of fresh blood and relaxed bowels and bladder. He didn't have to see the body of whoever it was to know the man was dead. He walked through the workroom and into the showroom. There, he saw the sprawled body of the saddle maker. The man had caught a bullet in the center of his forehead.
Damn.
Frank wondered if the man was married with a family.
Where'd the son of a bitch go?
The shouted question came from outside, jarring Frank from his musing. Hard gunfire rattled the morning, coming from the stone church's location.
Leave the church alone! That's where all the women is! Don't shoot at the church, you might hit one of them!
Well, them damn women are shooting at me! What the hell am I supposed to do?
Leave them be. We can deal with them later. Get that damn bank vault open.
Morgan's disappeared. I ain't got no idea where he went.
Oh, the bitch done shot me in the ass.
Oh, Jesus, stupid crap. Now she done shot me too. Somebody kill that damn woman.
Frank smiled. He had a pretty good idea who that woman might be.
That shooting, Clarabelle. Shoot the scum again.
I was right.
I want her. That's Sister Clarabelle. She's my type of woman.
Lonesome Howard.
Well, you can damn sure have her. You and her will make a pair. I ain't neither one of you got a lick of sense. Oh.
Shut your blasphemous mouth, Stoner. She's a good Christian woman.
She's a fat pig is what she is. And you're a damn idiot.
I'll kill you when we get done with this town. I'll kill you in the name of the Lord.
Shut up, the both of you.
Frank chanced a glance out the busted front window of the saddle shop. None of the outlaws were in sight. He had no target, yet. The gunfire in town was now sporadic firing.
Whoopee! I done found me a high-yaller nigger gal. I'm gonna...
You ain't gonna do nothing but see Jesus.
Frank smiled. Grandmother Marvella gave the outlaw a taste of her shotgun.
Johnny! Johnny!
Johnny's dead on the boardwalk. He caught a full load of buckshot in the belly. Damn near tore him in two.
Who killed him?
Some damned old nigger woman. Looked like she was about 100 years old.
You shoot her?
No, I couldn't get a shot off.
You damned godless heathens! Leave this town, all of you!
If we don't...
Frank recognized the voice of Brooks Olson.
Marvella and me will wipe out the whole filthy lot of you.
So, Clarabelle was holed up with Marvella. Now that was quite a pair for sure.
You fat pig! I'm gonna shoot you personal. Riding your big fat ass just to see you jump and holler. Then I'm gonna hop on and poke that good-looking high yeller girl.
The hell you will!
An outlaw crossed the mouth of an alley. Frank lifted his rifle, sighted. The outlaw rose up on tiptoe for a couple of seconds, then pitched forward onto the boardwalk.
Where'd that shot come from?
I don't know. I couldn't tell. Somewhere's across the street.
Where's that doctor who lives here? I got two men with buckshot in their asses.
I ain't seen him, sonny. I reckon he's out of town.
And we have plenty more buckshot where that came from, you sorry pieces of buffalo turd.
Hey, geez, something. I mean to tell you, boys, that there is my kind of woman.
And you're a damned old hypocritical fool.
I think I love you, sister.
That makes me want to puke.
I'm gonna grab you up and tote you off into the woods, sister. We can be the modern-day Adam and Eve.
Now I am going to puke.
You'll learn to love me, sister. I'll grow on you.
Like a wart.
My God. Ain't she something? Talk dirty to me some more, sister. I'm getting all excited.
Crazy son of a bitch.
You fellas ready to blow that safe?
Not yet.
What the hell's the holdup?
A fuse long enough for us to get clear.
Hurry up, will ya?
We just about got it. Couple more minutes and she'll blow.
Get clear, everybody!
Frank slipped back outside and headed for the ditch behind Main Street. He didn't want to be close to the bank.com stage office when the dynamite blew. He had a hunch the explosion was going to take out several buildings and kill or maim anyone close to the blast. And he suspected the huge safe would still be intact. Frank made the ditch without being spotted and found a relatively dry part of the depression in which to belly down. Wouldn't be long now.
You better hunt the down, sugar booger! When that dynamite blows, it's gonna be like the end of the world for a few seconds. I wouldn't want nothing to happen to a single hair on your precious head.
Ah! You can kiss my Christian ass!
I'm getting more and more worked up, my precious flower!
You're an idiot, Lonesome.
I'm in love! Praise the Lord!
Everybody ready for the big blow?
Everybody get down! Light the fuse!
It's sputtering!
Frank braced himself. The explosion created a concussion that blew out every window along Main Street. Bricks, glass, and chunks of wood were blown high into the sky. When the debris began raining down, the larger chunks knocked holes in roofs and awnings and killed two outlaws by landing on their heads. The stage office bank building and both buildings on either side of it were completely destroyed. The huge safe moved back about a foot, but remained undamaged except for a few scratches.
Damn.
When the ground stopped shaking and his hearing returned, Frank raised up and peered over the edge of the ditch, just in time to see an outlaw he knew was part of Sonny's group run into the alley, both hands filled with six guns. Frank shoved a couple of fresh rounds into his rifle and rolled out of the ditch, scrambling toward the buildings. Lonesome Howard came stumbling out of an alley, shaking his head.
Sweet pea! Darling! Are you hurt? My precious flower!
Clarabelle gave him a blast from her shotgun. It was a shell filled with birdshot, and most of the shot missed him.
Take that, you heathen!
Does this mean you don't love me anymore, sugar booger?
Lonesome ran back toward the debris-littered alley. Clarabelle gave him another blast just as Lonesome reached the alley, the buckshot missing him and knocking holes in the building.
You bitch! I could give you a good laugh! Now I'm gonna have to kill you for rejecting my affections and breaking my heart.
The man has become crazy as a lizard.
The assault against the town of South Raven appeared to be a standoff. The town lost 3 buildings along Main Street from the explosion and 1 house due to fire. The outlaws lost about a dozen men. The outlaws took 1 woman. As far as Frank could tell, 3 or 4 local men were lost. Frank tried the back door to a building. It was unlocked. He stepped into the storeroom of a dress shop and walked to the front. The show window was gone, shattered by the blast. Frank slipped to the front, broken glass crunching under his boots, and looked out. He could hear the sounds of hooves fading away from the far edge of town. Several of the outlaws were heading out, giving up on the plan to take over the town. For whatever reason, a lone outlaw tried to run across the wide main street. A dozen guns barked. A dozen bullets fired by local men hit the outlaw and sent him spinning around in the middle of the street. He was dead before he hit the dirt. The old adage, often repeated, came to Frank's mind. You don't buffalo a western town. Westerners just won't let it happen. Frank listened intently as the sounds of several more galloping horses reached him. More outlaws were giving up the fight and hauling their ashes out of town.
Let's get the hell out of here. This ain't working out.
I'm with you, Shorty. I'm pulling out.
Come on, Sonny. It's all over. Let's get out of here while the getting is good.
Yeah! I'm with you, boys. Let's get going. Morgan? You hear me, Morgan?
Frank waited silently in the shop.
I'm gonna make it my life's ambition to hunt you down and kill you. You hear me, Morgan?
You're at the end of a long list, Lonesome.
Get to the horses, boys. There's always another day and another town. We're done here.
I'm gonna kill you too, Sugar Booger. You'll regret spurning my love.
There was near silence in the town for several minutes. The only sounds, the rapidly fading hooves of the outlaws' horses as they made their getaway from a town too tough for them. Frank stepped out of the dress shop and stood on the boardwalk, looking up and down the wide main street. No shots came at him. The town was clear of outlaws. Live ones, anyway. Frank heard the clop-clop of horses' hooves and looked up toward the other end of town. Doc Raven was driving into town. He reined up and stood up in his buggy, staring in amazement at the carnage in his town. He spotted Frank and sat back down, clucking at the horse, driving up to Frank.
What the hell happened, Frank?
The townsfolk ran off Sonny's gang, Doc. They stood together, proud and solid.
The stone church began emptying of women, kids, and the elderly. Bob walked up to Doc Raven and Frank.
You reckon he'll be back, Frank?
I doubt it. They got a pretty good licking this time around. I don't think they'll want seconds. Is Wolf all right?
Fit as a fiddle. I just gave him a couple biscuits I had in my pocket, and he gobbled them right down.
Doc Raven looked over at the ruins of the stage office cum bank and smiled.
That safe cost me a lot of money. Looks as though it was worth the price paid. Let me get my office ready to receive patients.
Frank walked the town, checking each business and home for any dead or wounded. Mrs. Harvey's throat was cut, the last brutal act of Sonny's gang. Frank covered her with a blanket and walked on. The general store was looted, and the farmer's wagon behind the store driven off, loaded with stolen supplies. Several more homes were looted by the outlaws, but all in all, the town of South Raven came out of the assault looking pretty good. The bodies of the dead outlaws were buried in a mass grave. Horace Vanderhoot stood in the street looking at the damage.
Don't worry about rebuilding. We shall pay for everything.
Yes, whatever the cost. This tragic event was our fault.
Has anyone seen Fuller Ross? Not that I really give a damn what happened to him.
No one could answer John Garver's question.
I hope the outlaws got him. I hope I never see him again.
Her remark pretty well summed up the feelings of all the Easterners. Frank saddled up and for over an hour tried to pick up the trail of the fleeing outlaws. But when they scattered, the gang broke up and rode off in all directions. Frank gave it up and rode back to town. He knew he would see many of the survivors again. Many would be carrying a powerful grudge against Frank, especially Sonny.
I'll be pulling out in the morning, Bob. There's no more I can do here. I don't think Sonny and his gang will be back.
Well, I'll sure be damn sorry to see you go, Frank. But I understand. And I'm with you about them outlaws. I think they took them a good bite of this town and didn't like the taste.
I believe you're right about that, Bob. I'm going to provision up now. But first I'm going over to Doc Raven's office and turn in this Deputy U.S. Marshal's badge.
Oh, you can have that. It's no good.
What do you mean?
Deputy U.S. Marshal was through here about 10 years ago. His horse threw him, startled by a rattlesnake. The fall broke the man's arm, and I said it. The Marshal was so grateful he gave me that badge as a souvenir. It's worthless.
You mean...
I thought it might give you more confidence if you didn't know the truth. But it worked, didn't it?
Frank said his few goodbyes late that afternoon and pulled out before dawn the next morning, the pack horse Bob gave him trailing on a lead rope. He headed southwest toward Virginia City. The town was once a rip-roaring place, but as the mining played out, the good times moved on. Still, it was a place where he could find a good hotel, someone else to serve up a fine meal, and a store with some clothes, befitting a man of means. Frank arrived in Virginia City by the end of the week after burying two more of Sonny's gang, Burke and Sandy. The fools tried to brace him one night on the train. Frank rode into town, stabled his horses, got food for Wolf, then left his animals at the stable while he got a room, a bath, and purchased a new suit. Feeling fit and sharp, he headed to the saloon to listen in on the local gossip.
What'll it be, stranger?
Coffee.
Morgan!
Brooks Olson called out from across the saloon. The saloon fell silent, all eyes moving toward Frank as he walked to the end of the bar. A suddenly very nervous bartender took Frank's order for coffee.
You made a bad mistake following us here, Morgan.
I didn't follow you. I don't make a habit of following a trail of coyote crap.
Huh? You calling me a turd?
It suits you.
I should have killed you back in South Raven.
Try it now, Brooks.
You calling me out, Morgan?
Yeah, that's what I'm doing, you crazy bastard.
Brooks grabbed for iron.
Ooh!
Brooks' boots flew out from under him, slamming him to the cigarette and cigar-littered floor. Martin jerked his 6-gun.
Oh!
The muzzle just cleared leather when Frank's bullet tore into his chest. The Olsen cousins died on the floor. Martin's hand was stuck up to the wrist in a spittoon. Frank finished his coffee and turned from the bar, heading for the door. Frank stepped out onto the boardwalk and headed for the hotel. A good supper, a night's sleep, and he'd be gone from this place. Virginia City had lost its appeal. He took his supper in his room and went to bed early, pulling out before dawn. With no specific destination in mind, Frank drifted. He put all thoughts of a permanent home out of his mind, at least for a time. It seemed, no matter where he went, someone was there to challenge him. He suspected, should he move to the more civilized eastern part of the nation, even in New York City, it would eventually be the same. More than likely, the challenges would not come from gunfighters, but instead local bullies and loudmouths, people Frank long thought really held no useful or productive place in society.
But where or when is my place? Where the hell do I fit in the overall scheme of things?
He found no answer to his question. Frank pulled into Reno a few days later, wanting to satisfy his growing curiosity about how things worked out back in South Raven. He sent a wire to Doc Raven.
I'll be back in a few hours to check on any reply.
After he stabled and fed the animals, found a room, bathed, and got into fresh clothes, he returned to the telegraph office. To his surprise, Doc Raven replied quickly. It seemed that the body of Fuller Ross was found hanging in an old barn just outside of town. The man committed suicide. He left a note saying how sorry he was for his deeds. Wilma chose to stay in South Raven, She and Doc would marry after a respectable mourning time for her late husband. The remaining Easterners all went back to New York City. Marvella and her granddaughter Bessie took up residence in town. Bessie was attending school there. Doc hoped Frank would someday return to South Raven. He would always be welcome there. Frank folded the paper and put it into his wallet.
Things worked out.
On the trail, Frank used plenty of time to think. He finally got it through his head that what was left of Sonny's gang, probably 30 or so, was hard after him. Most would quit the hunt after a few months, but some would never rest, feeling Frank cheated them out of many thousands of dollars in ransom money. They wanted him dead.
All right, so I find me a place to hole up for a time.
The area was dotted with abandoned cabins built by men looking for their fortune in gold. Most never even found color and moved out, wiser and busted. But their cabins remained. Frank would find one and settle in. A few miles off the stage road, and only a couple of miles from a small town, Frank found a small cabin in pretty good shape and settled in. The first thing he did was shoot a deer so he would have meat. He hunted around and pulled up a bunch of wild onions to flavor up a big pot of stew. Then he built a fire, made a pot of coffee, and relaxed. Since leaving Reno, Frank let his beard grow, trimming it occasionally to keep it even. It changed his looks dramatically. After several days at the cabin, Frank decided to ride into town for supplies. As soon as he reined up in front of the general store, he knew he made a mistake too late to rectify. At the hitch rails in front of the saloon, across the street from the store, were more than a half dozen horses Frank recognized, including Lonesome Howard's.
Howdy, mister.
Howdy. Looks like the town is busy this day. What's the occasion?
Trouble hunting drifters. They've been here for about a week. I hear they're hunting Frank Morgan.
Is Morgan in the area?
Well, those gun hands think so. Something about a bounty on Morgan's head.
Well, let me buy a few things and get gone. I don't want to get caught up in the middle of a gunfight.
I'd like to see Frank Morgan come riding into town and tangle with those ne'er-do-wells. I bet he'd kill every one of them.
6 or 7 to 1? Those are long odds, my friend.
Frank could do it, I bet. He's the fastest man that ever packed iron. I just read a story about him. Why, he's killed hundreds of bad men.
Frank shook his head and handed the man his grocery list.
I'll fill this right quick, sir.
Well, I'll just be damned. It's Frank Morgan. Turn around and face me, Morgan.
Frank Morgan? Where?
Frank was standing next to a barrel of axe handles. He dropped his hand to the barrel.
Right in front of you, stupid.
The gunslick took several steps forward.
Turn around, Morgan, damn you.
Frank turned, one hand sliding an axe handle out of the barrel. He conked the man on the head with the wood, and the outlaw sank to the floor without as much as a grunt.
Are you really Frank Morgan?
Yes.
Frank jerked the unconscious man's Colt from leather and tucked it behind his gun belt.
Now, if you would, kindly fill that order for me.
Oh, my God. Look, Mr. Morgan.
He pointed. Lonesome Howard and the other outlaws were walking across the street toward the general store.
I'll take it outside.
I sure would appreciate that, sir.
Frank stepped out onto the boardwalk and stood there. The 6 outlaws stopped in the middle of the street, surprised at seeing Morgan.
That beard don't work, Morgan. I'd know you anywhere.
And you intend to do what, Howard?
Before Lonesome could reply, a rather portly gentleman wearing a badge on his coat stepped out of a building.
Here now, you men, what is going on?
A man Frank knew only as Max couldn't be bothered with the marshal.
Carry your butt out of here, fat man, before you get it shot off.
I beg your pardon?
Nils Findlay clarified the message.
Shut up and get your fat ass back inside. Does that make it any clearer for you?
I told you I'd kill you someday, Morgan. Now's the time.
You got it to do, Howard. I'm damn tired of this. Drag iron.
Lonesome's hand snaked his 6 gun out of leather. Frank shot him just as Lonesome was leveling his pistol. Frank's bullet cut through Lonesome's belly and blew out the man's back on the left side.
Oh, Lord.
Lonesome went down to his knees in the dirt. Frank jumped to one side as the other outlaws grabbed for iron. Frank put lead into one, and the impact of the .45 caliber slug turned the man around. The others filled the cool air with lead. But Frank changed positions again, diving into the alleyway.
Kill the bastard! Ah! Shit!
He fell over, face down in the dirt. Max fired, and the bullet cut and burned a shallow groove into the top of Frank's shoulder. Frank leveled his Colt, putting lead into Max's chest. Ah! Max went down slowly, much like a puppet with broken strings, sinking to the dirt. He stretched out in the street as if going to sleep forever. The remaining outlaws broke and ran for their horses, jumping into the saddles and galloping away. Frank let them go. He walked out into the street, feeling the warm flow of blood ooze down onto his arm and chest from the wound in his shoulder. He walked up to Lonesome, still on his knees, both hands holding his perforated belly.
The Lord will punish you for this, Morgan.
Are you serious, Howard?
I am the sword of the Almighty.
Well, Lonesome, your blade got dull.
Your attempts, Sinner Morgan. You're burning hellfires?
Here comes the doctor, Howard. Maybe he can save your worthless hide.
If he does, I'll come looking to kill you, Morgan.
Howard fell over to one side and lay in the dirt.
You want to sell me your ranch, Howard?
Hell no. Oh.
I'll give you a good price for it.
Sooner, give it to a damn Injun.
Now that's not a very Christian thing to say, Howard. I'd take real good care of it. The Lord with those suggestions on your lips.
The town doctor walked over and looked at Lonesome Howard.
He's done for. I think your bullet tore up his liver and kidney.
To petition with you.
Hell with you, too.
The doctor walked over to where Nils lay, all sprawled in the horse crap.
This one might live.
He motioned for some men to move Nils to his office. Lonesome Howard closed his eyes. Frank went back to the general store and paid for his supplies, picking up a can of Cuticura anti-pain plaster and a bottle of Dr. Sherman's prickly ash bitters. He walked out of the store and began to stow his supplies on the pack saddle's canvas packs.
You want me to take a look at that shoulder?
It's all right, Doc. Just a burn, that's all.
The man taken to my office just died.
Tough luck.
You're a cold bastard, Morgan.
But a live bastard, Doc.
For the time being, at least.
Frank managed to smile and swung into the saddle. He nodded at the doctor and rode away, back toward his cabin.
He was only defending himself, Doc.
I have no use for gunfighters. Would have benefited the country had Frank Morgan died this day.
How, Doc?
Yeah, the man's a living legend.
A legend written in blood.
The doctor walked away, back to his office. The store clerk looked down the road Frank took. Morgan was out of sight.
I feel sorry for the man.
Yeah? Well, I'll tell you this. We ain't heard the last of Frank Morgan.
Last Gunfighter Showdown is a Graphic Audio production. Copyright 2002, William W. Johnstone. Published by arrangement with Kensington Publishing Corporation. All rights reserved. Production copyright 2008, The Cutting Corporation. All rights reserved. Performed by Ken Jackson, James Konacek, Andy Clements, Thomas Penny, Dylan Lynch, David Coyne, Christopher Graybill, James Lewis, Michael John Casey, Stephen Carpenter, Terrence Aselford, Richard Rowan, Tim Carlin, Michael Glenn, Barbara Pinellini, Kate Torrey, Erica Rose, M.B. Van Dorn, Peter Stray, Eric Messner, Karen Carbone, Nanette Savard, Scott McCormick, Tom Simpson, and Mort Shelby. Directed by Ken Jackson. Book adapted for graphic audio by Timothy Lynch. Dialogue editing and graphic audio sound design by Brian Rogers and Greg Reinfeld. The Last Gunfighter theme and original music were composed by Johann Detweiler. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. If you enjoyed The Last Gunfighter, be sure to look for the First Mounted Man series, available at Rogue Stops Everywhere at 1-800-670-5220 or at www.graphicaudio.net, where you'll find samples of all our Action Pump titles, as well as free downloadable extras, forums, and podcasts. Read the Pinnacle Edition. Visit www.kensingtonbooks.com. Keep listening for previews of other graphic audio thrillers.
Presents Mark Dalton, Owner-Operator. Book number 2, Reefer Madness and More Tales of the Open Road by Ido Van Belkin. Copyright 2008, Ido Van Belkin. Performed by David Coyne and the Graphic Audio Players. Episode number 8, Big Time Owner-Operator.
Elliot Atherton, the software company CEO whose daughter Mark saved from a certain rape by the side of the highway, had been good to his word. The man had paid for the repairs to Motherlode, compensated Mark for the late penalties on his load, he'd avoided any late charges but figured $500 was fair, and he'd given Mark another $500 just as a way of saying thank you. Now Motherlode was back in top shape, cruising down Highway 400 as smooth as silk, and looking like she just drove off the showroom floor. But despite the truck's condition, Mark couldn't help but think that Motherlode was on her last legs, at least with himself behind the wheel. After all, in the past few months, she'd been trashed by a bunch of punks, been in a scrape with a truck driven by a kidnapper, and bashed in by a highway meeting with a deer. He hated the thought of selling the old girl since Mark and Motherlode had been through so much together, but the time seemed right. She had 800,000 kilometers on her and shined like a fresh loony. If there was ever a time that Mark could get the most resale value out of her, that time was now.
Yeah, maybe in a couple weeks I'll take out an ad. That would give me some time to clean her up inside and get myself ready to say goodbye.
Just then, a minivan in the left lane pulled right, cutting off a station wagon in the center lane and sending it swerving onto the shoulder. A cloud of dust exploded off the shoulder as the rear end of the wagon cut a swath through the gravel.
Oh, shit!
Mark lifted his foot off the accelerator and got on the brake. The wagon's rear wheels caught in the dirt, and the back end of the car swung back out onto the highway. Mark jammed on the brake. That was a close one. Another second or two, and Motherlode would have plowed into the wagon, wiping out the family and destroying the truck's front end once again. Mark set the parking brake and switched on his hazard lights.
Guess the time to sell is now. while I still have a truck to sell.
Just then, Motherlode's air pressure valve let go with a sharp blast, almost as if the big machine were answering Mark.
Uh-huh.
Mark nodded once, then got out to see if anyone was hurt. After making his delivery outside Toronto, Mark decided not to call Bud for his next load until he'd taken the time to check out new truck prices at a few dealerships around town. But while most of them were offering competitive packages, and any of the new makes and models would have been an improvement over the 8-year-old Motherlode, Mark wasn't about to change brands. Motherlode was a Peterbilt 379, and she'd served him well over the years. If he was going to buy another truck, it would be a new 379 with many of the bells and whistles that modern technology had to offer. Mark pulled into the Roadway Truck Center lot around 4 in the afternoon. He had barely parked Motherlode and was about to shut her down when he noticed a man stepping through the dealership's front door, heading straight for him. He was wearing dark pants, a light-colored shirt, and a striped tie. His hair was neatly trimmed, yet slightly mussed, as if he'd spent time in front of the mirror to get each hair exactly out of place, just enough to make it look like he didn't care all that much what his hair looked like.
Must have smelled me pulling in.
Woo-wee! Beautiful day, isn't it?
Mark looked up and saw several dark clouds looming.
If you're a duck, maybe.
Hey, you've got a sense of humor. I can tell we're gonna get along just famously.
Not goddamn likely.
How can I help you?
Interested in trading in for a new truck, a new 379.
Brand new?
Mark nodded.
Well, we've got a good selection of new trucks on the lot, and if we don't have it, we'll order it for you, no problem.
Every dealer I've been to has said that.
I'll tell you what, you'll find yourself the best deal you can, and we'll not only match it, but we'll beat it by $2,000.
Sounds good.
Damn right it is.
The salesman threw his thumb in the direction of Motherlode.
So, you looking to trade this one in?
Mark nodded.
How many clicks?
800,000.
Ooh, that's a lot of mileage. We'd probably have to do a lot of work to get it up to Roadway's pre-owned vehicle standard of excellence.
Yeah, right. Standard's my ass. The truck runs like a top, and it's never looked as good.
Yeah, I'll give you that. But if it's running so good, why are you getting rid of it?
Because I can afford to buy a new one.
Hey, my kind of customer knows what he wants and doesn't like to beat around the bush.
The man flashed a smile that had no doubt been perfected by years of practice in front of a mirror.
And that's why I'm not going to haggle with you. Of course, I'd have to have our mechanics check it over, but I'd say I could probably offer you, say, $35,000 in trade.
What?
I know, it's a good offer, but I'm willing to stick to it no matter what our mechanics find.
Mark was more than a little insulted. Motherlode was worth $50,000 easy, especially with all the new paint and bodywork. He'd seen other 379s advertised for as much, some of them with more mileage on them.
That's about $15,000 less than what I expected.
Hey, we've got to put some money into the truck before we resell it. We've got a business to run, you know.
It was obvious that they were able to undercut other dealers by $2,000 on the sale price of a new truck because they would stiff the buyer $15,000 on his trade-in.
You're not the only one running a business.
If you think you can get more selling the truck on your own, go ahead. But then you've got to take out an ad and leave the truck someplace where people can look at it and hope it doesn't get damaged or vandalized before you complete a sale.
He had a point there. Mark was always on the road and would need to let Motherlode sit for a few weeks so buyers could see it. Then he'd have to turn around to sign papers and close the deal.
Or maybe you could hire someone to drive it for you. You know, start your own fleet.
What did you say?
Hire someone to drive your truck. You know, be a real big-time owner-operator with your own truck fleet.
Huh. That's not a bad idea. Not a bad idea at all.
After all, how hard could it be to manage two trucks instead of one? Mark bought his new 379 from a dealer in Northern Ontario, choosing to buy there because the salesman never lied to him, never promised him anything, and simply shrugged his shoulders when Mark balked at his trade-in offer on Motherlode. That had been a week ago, and in three more days, Mark would be taking ownership of his new truck. 400-plus horsepower, overdrive transmission, engine brake, upper bunk, and as many extended warranties as he could afford. He decided on a dark shade of green and asked that the name, Motherlode 2, be painted in small, inconspicuous script on each side of the sleeper. He paid 3/4 of the sales price in cash, leaving the rest for monthly payments. In the meantime, he was interviewing drivers for Motherlode at a Tim Hortons in the east end of Brampton near the airport. The area was crawling with drivers, and Mark figured he'd be able to hire one easy, then have a couple of days off before they delivered his new truck on Friday. That had been the plan, but he was into his second day of interviews and was starting to think that all kinds of people wanted to drive a truck for a living, but nobody wanted to actually work for a living. Like this guy sitting across the table from him. He was a young guy, decent looking, and had a clean abstract. He seemed to be on the ball, too, until Mark began telling him about the job.
We do a lot of long hauling, so it wouldn't be unusual for you to make a trip west, stopping in Brandon, Regina, Edmonton, and Vancouver, and then making the same kind of stops on the way back again.
Hello, Vancouver. Takes a while to drive out there.
Yeah, it's kind of far away.
But I don't want to work any weekends. My wife...
Then you're in luck.
I am?
Yep. The Monday to Friday 9-to-5 trucking company is interviewing at the coffee time down the street. If you hurry, you just might catch him before all the good routes are gone.
Gee, thanks. Ass.
The next driver dropped by a half hour later. He was a young guy in his 20s wearing a new Mac ball cap and a pair of freshly washed jeans.
You okay working weekends?
Weekends? Sure, no problem.
Oh, good, good. And you don't mind driving long haul?
As long as I'm back every 5 days or so.
Oh?
Well, see, I got this girlfriend, and she is smoking hot. And I'm afraid if I'm going more than 5 days, she'll find someone else to turn a crank. Know what I mean? And I don't like picking up or delivering in Quebec. They don't speak English very well there, and it feels like a whole different country.
Okay, then. I've got your number. I'll let you know.
You'll call me, right?
Sure.
The next guy through the door seemed perfect. Good driving record, clean cut, well-spoken, willing to work. Except for one small problem.
You're okay for the U.S., right?
Well, I'm not sure. I did a few years in New York State Pen for assaulting a police officer. But it was a long time ago. You think that's a problem?
Then there were a series of drivers who probably would have been excellent, conscientious, hardworking, and loyal, except for the fact that they didn't speak a word of English. Mark was about to give up hope when a young man sat down in front of him.
I couldn't help overhearing. You're looking for a driver, right?
That's right.
Well, your search is over, man. Mitch Murtaugh's the name.
Mark was dubious. Sure, the guy, Mitch, was old enough to have some driving experience, and he looked well enough groomed to be a fine representative of the company, but there was something about the way he came on that put Mark on edge.
You drive?
12 years.
Mitch pulled a few papers from an inside jacket pocket.
It's all there. Clean abstract, clean police record, letter of reference. And if you want the info that ain't there, I'll get it for you.
Wow. You work weekends?
Sure.
Extended periods away from home?
No problem. In fact, don't take this the wrong way, but sometimes the more I stay away from home, the better.
What sort of rate are you looking for?
Mitch told him, and they began working out an arrangement. When they were done, they shook hands.
Hey, when can I start?
As soon as you want.
How about right now?
Mark put a call into Bud, looking for a load for his driver.
Drive safe.
I will.
The salesman closed the door of Mark's brand new Peterbilt 379. Mark sat in the driver's seat, shoulders back, and head held high. Mark simply enjoyed the smell of his new truck. It was nice to know that no one had ever spilled coffee or farted on the seat, and that he would be the only one to ever spend the night in the sleeper.
It's gonna be fun driving this. Oh yeah, baby. Hello.
Hey, Mark. Yeah, it's Mitch. I got a flat on the right front tire.
Yeah, and?
Well, I thought you better get it fixed, since I can't drive it this way.
Of course, as a truck owner, it was up to Mark to arrange for such repairs so he could keep track of cost and quality of any repair.
Where are you?
Mitch gave Mark his exact location, on the side of the road near the military base in Trenton, Ontario. Mark checked his book of contracts and found he had a card from a company he'd done business with in Belleville.
Stay where you are and I'll send someone to you. Got it?
Yeah, no problem, boss.
Boss. Mark liked the sound of that. Mark Dalton, boss man. He called the company in Belleville and gave them the location of Mitch and Motherlode. After they assured him they'd be there in 20 minutes, Mark put Motherlode 2 into drive and headed south for his first load. Before he even reached his pickup point...
Oh, damn it, what now?
Mark was expecting it to be Mitch, but it wasn't.
This is Jerry from Wright Tire in Belleville. I'm in front of the entrance to the base and there's no truck here. I asked the guy walking the road if he'd seen any truck and he told me there'd been one here with a flat tire, but he got it changed and was gone about 2 minutes before he got here.
I told him to wait for you.
Well, he's not here now.
Sorry.
No problem. We got a minimum $50 charge for any service call. I'll send the invoice to you in the mail. Hello?
Where are you?
On the road, boss. Hauling ass.
Why didn't you wait for the truck I sent?
Oh, you called the guy? Oh, sorry. I didn't know. I was waiting so long, I thought you forgot, so I made a call myself, and the guy came right away. Hey wanted to repair it, but I told him to give me a whole new tire. So he did. And it only cost you about $175. Isn't that great?
Yeah, great.
He hadn't been in business as an owner for more than a few days, and he was already a couple $100 in the hole. Hopefully it was just a case of beginner's bad luck. After all, how much else could go wrong in his first week as an owner? Mark had been driving his new rig, Motherlode 2, for 3 days and couldn't be more pleased with the truck's performance. It was quieter, easier to drive, more comfortable, more fuel efficient, more everything than his previous truck that he wondered why he waited so long to make the upgrade to a newer model. Best of all, he hadn't received a phone call from Mitch in all that time, which Mark took to be a sign that everything was running smoothly. No news, after all, is good news. But by the end of the fourth day, when he still hadn't heard from his driver, Mark began to worry. If everything had gone according to plan, Mitch was supposed to have delivered his load last night in Montreal and then call him to let him know what was going on. But rather than wait any longer, Mark decided to call Mitch himself.
Yellow.
Yeah, Mitch, it's your boss, Mark.
Gotcha. I'm not here right now. Leave a message and I'll get back to you as soon as possible.
God damn it. Hey, bud. Mark here.
Mark Dalton?
Yes, Mark Dalton.
You need another load already?
No, I'm calling you about my driver, Mitch Murtaugh.
That guy's as crazy as you are. You know that?
You talked to him recently?
Yeah, he called from Montreal. I gave him a load into Ottawa.
When was that?
Yesterday. He was supposed to have called late last night, early this morning, for another load, but I haven't heard from him.
Thanks, bud.
Mark hung up and then tried Mitch's number again.
Yeah?
This is Mark Dalton calling.
Oh, hey, man. I've been meaning to call you.
Where are you?
Somewhere outside Fredericton.
What are you doing there? You're supposed to be in Ottawa.
Yeah, that's what I've been meaning to call you about. I was in Ottawa, but then I met up with this chick. Well, we sort of hit it off at a bar, and, well, she's got a rig of her own, and she offered me more money than you to team up with her. She's paying me more, and I'm getting laid every night. It's an awesome deal, man.
Oh, how the hell am I supposed to compete against a fringe benefit like that? Where's my truck?
Oh, not to worry, man. It's parked at a truck stop east of Gatineau. There's the manager of the place has the key, and he told me it'd be cool to park it there a few days.
Mark was seeing red. How could a driver forget about his obligations to his employer and just leave his truck stranded at a rest stop? As he shook his head, Mark realized it was easy when there was more money and feminine charms at work. Mitch might be getting some, but Mark was the one who was being screwed.
Where exactly is the truck?
Mitch gave Mark directions to the rest station and the manager's name.
Hey, how you be paying me for the load I drove for you?
Mark was speechless. This guy had left Mark high and dry, and now he was expecting to get paid for providing the inconvenience.
Oh, yeah, I'll put a check in the mail for you.
Man, can you send it express post? I could really use the money.
Better yet, I'll email it to you.
Thanks, man.
Jackass.
Mark hung up, wondering how long it would be before idiot Mitch realized you can't send checks over the internet. Mark made his delivery in Toronto, then parked Motherlode in a fenced yard near the airport that had a security guard on duty at the front gate 24 hours a day. He'd have to pay to leave his truck there, but the peace of mind over the safety of his truck far outweighed any expense. Besides, all of his worry and concern these days was being spent on Motherlode, and what sort of shape he'd find her in when he got to Gatineau. Sure, the truck was parked in a safe place and the manager had a key, but that didn't mean there wouldn't be other people bumping into it or running keys along its body or pissing on its tires. Mark knew all of those things could happen to the truck quite easily, because he'd done all of them to other people's trucks over the years. Once Motherlode 2 was in place, Mark booked a car through a rental place that had an office in Ottawa that guaranteed him a lift out of Gatineau at no extra charge. All told, it took him half a day and $200 to get himself onto Highway 401 headed west. Mark could only shake his head. Less than a week in business and he was already out $400. And he was no better off than when he started. In fact, he was worse off because now he was right back where he started, with an extra truck and no driver. But now he had to get the truck back to Toronto and hire a new driver, which would take another couple of days, if he was lucky. To make matters worse, he now had a brand new truck on the road, and every day he spent dealing with his old truck was a day that his new truck wasn't making any money for him. In many ways, Mark felt like he was at the bottom of this deep hole, and every time he tried to crawl up the sides of it, the earth gave away, burying him a little bit deeper than before. And instead of the dirt collecting at the bottom of the hole, which would eventually raise him up to a level where he could climb out, the hole just kept getting deeper and deeper, with no chance of him ever getting out. It was enough to make Mark want to cry. But he wasn't about to do that. Not now. He was a smart, experienced driver, and this had been one little setback. Next time, he'd be a little smarter about how he'd go about hiring a driver, a little bit more careful about who he allowed behind the wheel of his beloved Motherlode. There had to be a few good drivers out there somewhere. He just had to find one, that's all. A few hours later, Mark was turning the car over to a clerk at the rental firm, then hopped into the car so the clerk could drive him out to Gatineau. The clerk was young, clean-cut, and called Mark sir every time he addressed him. Best of all, he drove the car smoothly, without any hard stops or rough starts.
Hey, you ever drive a truck?
Excuse me, sir?
Never mind.
When they got to the rest station outside Gatineau, they had to drive around to the lot twice before Mark recognized Motherlode parked in a corner between two tankers.
Is that it?
Yeah.
Motherlode was covered in dirt, and the whole right side had been spattered by something that looked like dark, dark mud. One headlight was broken, and there was a big dent in the front left fender like someone had dropped a bowling ball into it.
You want me to hang around?
No, that's fine. I'll be all right.
The clerk drove off, leaving Mark alone with Motherlode. He stood in front of the truck for several minutes just looking at it. It was clear to Mark now that the truck would be doomed as long as he owned it. Letting someone else drive it wasn't good enough. He had to divest himself of the truck before it took a blow that it wouldn't be able to recover from.
Sorry, Mother. You deserve better.
Mark wasn't sure what he was going to do, but one thing was for certain. Motherlode was not going to spend her twilight years as a hack in some greasy spoon. Mark made himself comfortable in the driver's seat and readied himself to take her home. Mark headed west down the 401 to Toronto, wondering why he was having such a bad string of luck with old Motherlode. Of all the drivers out there to choose from, he had to pick the grand prize winner, Mitch Murtaugh. Here was a guy who couldn't follow instructions. He'd been told to wait for Mark's tire man, had a misguided sense of initiative, called his own tire man while one was on the way, then asked for a new tire when a repair would have sufficed, had no problem leaving Mark hanging out to dry, left Motherlode in a parking lot in Gatineau without telling Mark, and had the gall to ask for money, wanted his paycheck sent to him, probably with vacation pay included. The only thing understandable about the guy was that he'd left Mark to chase after a woman. Mark didn't agree with it, but at least he understood that part.
A million guys out there with an AZ license, but how many good drivers are there?
From Mark's experience as an owner, there were probably less than 100 in the whole country, or else they went into hiding whenever Mark was around. Knowing his ability to find trouble in the unlikeliest places, Mark wouldn't be surprised if the latter was at least partly true. Around Kingston, Mark pulled into a rest station for a bite to eat. He parked Motherlode as close to the restaurant as he could, hoping it might help keep the truck safe, then went inside. As he stood in line, waiting to order a burger and fries, he noticed a familiar face waiting two spots ahead of him.
Johnny Jones.
The guy acted like he hadn't heard Mark, or maybe Mark was mistaken.
Hey, Johnny Jones!
The guy in front finally turned around. He stared at Mark for a moment, then a look of recognition broke over his face.
Dalton?
That's right!
I haven't seen you in a
couple of years.
Mark had helped Johnny Jones out with a company that had been cheating him out of a lot of money it owed to him. He also managed to get Johnny a just-in-time load headed for the GM plant in Oshawa, then held the load ransom until the company agreed to pay Johnny what they owed him. The line moved forward and the woman behind the counter asked for Johnny's order.
Get your lunch and we'll talk while we eat.
Johnny nodded and placed his order. Mark joined him a few minutes later at a table by the window overlooking the parking lot.
You still with that company? What was it, JJ&G?
Nah, after you helped me with that just-in-time load, they didn't want to deal with me anymore.
Go figure.
Which was fine with me since I didn't want to deal with them either.
You still driving your own rig?
Oh, nope. I sold it, paid off the loan, and got a job as a company driver. Less money, but less headaches, too.
Mark nodded. That was true enough.
You still happy as a company driver?
Well, actually, I'm looking to buy my own truck again. I've been saving my money, and I've got enough for a down payment. If I could only find a decent used truck at a good price.
Mark just stared at Johnny, a smile slowly starting to break across his face. This was just too perfect, even for him.
You're looking to buy a truck?
I haven't found anything yet, but I'm looking.
Well, maybe your search is over.
What do you mean?
I'm looking to sell Motherlode.
The Motherlode? Mark Dalton's famous Motherlode?
Yep. In fact, it's right over there.
You quitting driving?
Oh, no, I can't. It's in my blood.
Johnny looked out the window and probably noticed the smashed headlight and dented fender.
Well, then what's wrong with the truck?
Nothing. I just bought myself a new one and haven't gotten rid of the old one yet. You interested?
Oh, you bet! Although...
Well, great. Hey, let's take a look.
They spent a solid 20 minutes walking around the truck, Johnny doing a thorough circle check while Mark hung back and watched.
Oh, looks good inside and out.
Well, you know me, Johnny. I'm a professional, and I take good care of my truck.
Oh, I know. It's just that...
What?
Well, this is a Pete, after all, and broken headlight and dent fender aside, it's in good shape and would probably cost more money than I got.
Maybe. Maybe not.
You don't have to smooth talk me about the truck, Mark. I know it's in good shape. It's just a question of money. How much I have and how much you want.
How much do you have?
You know negotiations don't work that way. How much you want for it?
Well, I was thinking 50,000.
That's a little bit more than I had in mind.
Which was how much?
Well, somewhere around 35,000. Hey, I know the truck's worth more, but that's all I can afford at the moment. And believe me, after nearly losing a couple of trucks, I know exactly what I can and can't afford.
That's not why I'm laughing.
Well, then why are you?
I'm laughing because while I was looking for 50,000, but I was prepared to settle for 35,000. Then I run into you, and that's just what you have to spend. It's almost like somebody up there, maybe even Motherlode herself, is trying to tell me something.
That much was true. Sure, he could probably sell the truck for more money, but here was Johnny Jones, a driver Mark knew would take good care of Motherlode. What was the value of such peace of mind? Mark had already tried to make money off Motherlode and had failed miserably. Maybe he'd be better off just making sure she went to a good driver, regardless of how much money he earned from the deal. It wasn't a very smart business move, but Mark had already proven he was a lousy businessman. Maybe he and his truck would be better off simply being a good person.
Oh, maybe I could afford $36,000 or even $40,000, but I'd have to talk it over with my wife first.
No need. I'll sell it to you for $35,000, as long as you promise to take good care of her.
Of course I will!
Then it's a deal.
The two men shook. Mark felt a little regret over not holding out for more, at least to cover what he'd lost trying to be a big shot owner. But the more he thought about it, the more he realized the lesson he'd learned had come cheap at $1,000. And besides, the warm feeling he felt shaking Johnny's hand was absolutely priceless.
If you enjoyed this Mark Dalton adventure, be sure to check out next month's episode featured on the following action-packed titles: Deathland Zero, Encounter, Jackknife Number One, Jackknife. And be sure to pick up the compilation of all 9 Mark Dalton episodes on Reefer Madness.
If you can't find that hot graphic audio title you're looking for, just head to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD or MP3 disc format. Or, the fastest and cheapest way, download that puppy and play it on any of the many devices that'll play Windows Media. And if you're on the road or just a total computer feeb, snatch up the phone and call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220 or www.graphicaudio.net.